News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Prosecutors in Brooklyn, New York say they're confident they have evidence for charges of murder in the first degree against Sebastian Cepeda, the man accused of burning a woman to death on a New York City subway.
On the murder one, the top charge is life without the possibility of parole. And of course, on standard murder, the top count is 25 years to life.
Brooklyn District Attorney Eric Gonzalez, investigators still working to identify the woman. Canadian ministers are in Mar-a-Lago in Florida today for talks with President-elect Trump's team as he weighs tariff and Canadian imports. A federal judge has ruled that the woman accusing Jay-Z and Sean Diddy Combs of raping her at a party when she was 13 years old can remain anonymous, but may be required to reveal her identity at a later date to allow Jay-Z's legal team to collect facts necessary to prepare for trial. Another stowaway was caught on a Delta flight, this time from Seattle to Hawaii, as it taxied for takeoff on Christmas Eve. This is ABC News.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For WRCE 107.7 FM News, I'm Joanne Krulatz. A missing man from Westby has been found safe. 49-year-old Corey Simonson had been reported missing Monday afternoon after taking his mother's car and making suicidal statements. Simonson had been arrested and accused of crashing a vehicle into a building on Viroqua's Main Street Sunday morning. He was later arrested by Westby police. The Wisconsin State Journal reports that social media accounts believed to belong to Abundant Life Christian school shooter Natalie Rupnow indicate the 15-year-old spent time in online forums where violent videos and white supremacist beliefs are common. Rupnow would have had access to that sort of material on platforms popular with other school shooters like Discord and Telegram. Investigators are still sorting through evidence to try and determine Rupnow's motivations for fatally shooting a teacher and a fellow Abundant Life student and wounding six others before killing herself just over a week and a half ago. In an interview with Wisconsin Eye, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss previews plans for the upcoming legislative session, including forming the Government Operation and Transparency, or GOAT, Committee to examine state operations. Voss says one of the ideas behind the committee is looking at how to reform government. Voss says the committee will be modeled on President-elect Donald Trump's DOGE. Former Wisconsin Governor and U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Tommy Thompson says he supports President-elect Donald Trump's controversial pick of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to lead HHS. Thompson says Kennedy wants to ensure that all vaccines are based upon science and that vaccine approvals take less time. Kennedy will need to be confirmed by the U.S. Senate. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Bucks drop one to the Nets. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks lost at home to the Brooklyn Nets, 111-105. Damian Lillard and Giannis both out with what's described as a non-COVID illness. Doc Rivers says the Nets' defense made the difference.
I thought the pressure got to us. I thought we didn't handle it very well. They sped us up. We broke our offense.
The Bucks travel to Chicago to play the Bulls tomorrow night. NFL, Packers holding practice for Sunday's game in Minnesota. Matt LaFleur asked about the status of defensive back Jair Alexander.
Are his chances of playing this week better than last?
I'd say probably not.
What's standing in the way?
His knee.
Men's college hockey. The Badgers take on Ferris State at 5 o'clock tomorrow night in the holiday faceoff at Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee. Wisconsin 7-10-1 for the season so far.
We'll have our work cut out from us, but for us right now, it's us getting focused for the puck drop, finding a way to get that game in our side of the ledger.
That's the Badgers head coach Mike Hastings with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy with rain tonight, a few foggy areas as well, lows in the upper 30s. For the afternoon, we'll look for a mostly cloudy sky, your Saturday high in the mid-40s. Maybe a shower Sunday once again, highs in the low 40s. It's 42 right now.
The Todd Alba Show.
UW Systems spends $51 million of our taxpayer money for consultants. Three times the budget shortfall that triggered the Oshkosh layoffs in 2023. Why is there such silence from Democrats in the state capitol on this? Ask people in Richland Center, Waukesha, Washington County, if they got their $51 million worth for the UW system.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. The Dom Salvia Show.
How about this one? Harvey Kay, a Delano Democrat.
The problem with that is that that was his mother's family name. You might not realize that he had a father, too.
Come on, man.
Subscribe to my arguments and you can call a Dom Democrat.
All right, I'll take a Dom Democrat. But Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a big favorite here on this show.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. Dom Salvia.
Next time, James Santel, former U.S. attorney and host of Amicus, The Law Review, will join me to discuss if the president-elect should be disqualified under the 14th Amendment's Insurrection Clause. Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. News from the Center, WRCE.
It is hour two of the Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media. I'm Jimmy Kuska filling in again today. I'll be back on the Civic Media airwaves next week, back in the news department where they have me covering things around the state and obviously with sports. This time of year with holiday tournaments, so I'll have my hands full. But getting another hour here on the Civic Media Network to talk a little bit of sports this hour, as you might expect from the sports director of the company, a chance to talk sports. I don't know what they expected when they asked me to do a show. But I am going to talk a lot of sports and going to do that this hour just a bit. In a half hour, there's a book coming out in 2025 covering the Milwaukee Bucks in the late 60s, early 70s called Building the Milwaukee Bucks, The Path to the First NBA Championship for the Bucks. We're going to do that with Jordan Tresky coming up a half hour from now. But at 4 o'clock, we'll switch over to the Dom Salvia Show. 6 o'clock, we'll go into the night. Nightlight with Pete Schwaba is coming your way at 6 tonight. First hour, appreciate all the callers chiming in about places in Wisconsin that they want to visit, maybe they've never been to, want to visit someday, put it on their bucket list. For me, Door County is my list. I've been in the state my entire life and never been there, so that is on my list to accomplish at some point here now as I head into my 40s. Going to do that hopefully sometime soon. But I appreciate all the people who called in and wrote in on the comments here on our live stream. A lot of fun talking to folks there as well. But in this segment, going to talk about something I had brought up on another show I had filled in for here on Civic Media, and that is a proposal that would drastically change how teams not only qualify for the playoffs but get seeded in them in high school football. It's the only sport that is not all play. That is, not every team gets in. So there are a very long list of ways, tiebreakers, et cetera, you have to go through to set the playoff field in football, where 240 teams make it in. 224 and an 11 player, and then 16 and 8. So there are a lot of things you go through, and there's a proposal that promises a little more transparency to this process, and also something that I think makes a lot of sense to me is setting the divisions that the teams are in at the start of the year, so there's not that guessing game when we finish the regular season. Brian Kaminsky is the president of the Wisconsin Football Coaches Association. He's also the head coach at Sun Prairie East, and someone I've had the fortune of being able to cover and call games for a very, very long time in my previous work in the Madison area. Coach Kaminsky, great to have you on here.
Awesome. Glad to be back with you here. This is like old days, huh?
This is like the old days, man. It is so much fun to talk to you. And I know that for you, this is a topic. And watching the presentations you've done and speaking about this topic, something you obviously have a lot of passion for, because first of all, this is something that affects every program across the state. But I think second of all, addresses a couple of things. One is kind of a longstanding issue, and one is a more recent issue. The longstanding issue being knowing what division you're in, and the more recent issue of computerized seating and looking for transparency. Can you tell us a little bit about the proposal that's been brought forth that the coaches are considering right now?
Yeah, it's been a lot of work, to be honest. We put together a committee with some coaches from Edgewood and Travis Wilson and Tony Biolo and Jason Gorse and Drake Zorbins, guys all throughout the state from different areas, different levels. We've discussed with the eight-player football as well. And like you said, really what we want to do is we want it to become transparent, right? We want everybody to know exactly what it takes, exactly where you stand. I think it'd be awesome. I think, you know, we could decide what week, but maybe like week five, we start doing a reveal show on Tuesday nights or something like that on WIS Sports, and we can kind of show current rankings for everybody where they stand, and we could be an unofficial one, and the WIA could have their official one, and we could cross-reference those as the season's going on to make sure that everything is in order. That way that Friday night at the end of the last regular season game, there's a smooth process. It could basically almost all be decided right away, and instead of taking that thing into the wee hours of the morning and opening it up to interpretation and stuff like that. So like you said, we'd be excited to set our enrollments before the season even starts. So right now I think we have it as 52 in each division. So you'd be just competing with those schools. That'd be a big change, because right now we know that if you're above 500 in your conference, you're in the playoffs for sure. But you know, every division could play out just a little bit differently. Right, there's not a secret number of wins to get you and be decided by your ranking that you get based upon this matrix. So you would have to be, you know, if we're Division One, then we're living in the Division One world and we're competing against those 52 teams. If we happen to be Division Two, then we're in the 52 world and we're competing against those separate 52 teams. So we like that. We also like the fact that it can really balance out the brackets, which is something we really like and we're excited about, while still maintaining the geographic representation. I think that's important with the WIA, and we've been told that, and we still feel we can do that in a way while still adjusting the brackets to ensure that, you know, there's a lot of years where you might get a level one game that could become a state championship game, right? And we're trying to avoid those and get those later in the playoffs, and we think it's a little bit more fair to those teams. And what a way it would create that excitement as well, and probably draw a few more fans in attendance at a level three or level four game in that type of scenario. So we're excited. It's been a lot of work. Really proud of our membership. You know, we went ahead and did a survey. Wow, we had 400 head coaches respond, and I think there's 425 or 26 head coaches throughout the state of Wisconsin. So to have almost 94% of the coaches respond tells us that they're interested in this. And for them to come back with 87.5, I think it was, percent in favor of this new matrix, really tells us that they feel now is the time for change. And again, we've discussed why, but what I really like about it is it's transparent. Everybody will know the formula. We can cross-reference it with the WIAA throughout the season, and really help speed up that Friday night at the end of the season.
Brian Kaminsky is the president of the Wisconsin Football Coaches Association. He's also the head coach at Sun Prairie East. I'm speaking from this as a because I'm an assistant coach in a small school district in southwestern Wisconsin, and we got to see it play out where I lived in the Six Rivers Conference, which is an all Division VII league, where our top two teams in the league, an undefeated team, got seated at number three, and then the team that they beat by one score in week nine was seated as the number six. So they had a rematch right away in level one, and it ended up being a 1-point game. The winner of that game, Potosi Castle, ended up in the Division VII state championship game, where they finished as runners up. So when you talk about putting teams in different places in the bracket, things like that, I think that was something that was loudly voiced this year when the computer seedings came out. That was one example. There are examples from across the state, from schools as large as Oconomowoc, you know, all the way through, again, the Division VII bracket, where teams felt like, you know, maybe the seeding didn't really shake out. I am curious about the setup of the divisions, because, you know, right now, as you said, the qualification to get in is a 500 or better record in conference play. How are conferences affected by this proposal where now, instead of just the seven conference games being kind of that metric to get in, that requirement to get in, now all nine games are going to be part of the formula?
Yeah, I think it's going to just add a little bit to each game, means a little bit more, right? Still, you're going to get about 80% of your tournament factor points or your ranking or your seeds going to still come from conference play. So conference play is still very important, but it just adds a little bit of juice and a little bit more interest, I think, in those non-conference games, where if you can get two quality opponents, get two wins, that's just going to boost your ranking as the season goes on. But and if you play two quality opponents and you don't win, it's not going to kill you either. I mean, we unfortunately lost to Verona and Maguanago. I started the year out 0-2. I ended up 6-3 overall. And, you know, I think in this matrix, we would have been maybe the 13th or 14th rated team in Division II, which is probably about where we should have been, I think.
Let's talk about the formula, because one thing about the current setup that, you know, proponents of the system, there are a lot of them. As you said, there's seven ace of coaches responding were in favor of this proposal. So let's talk about the formula, where the current setup for the computer modeling, nobody knows the formula or what goes into it, right? We know the basics, you know, winning games typically helps your cause, right? But how the teams get seeded after that, it's anybody's guess at this point. Only a select few actually know what actually goes into it. This proposal lays it out in the open what you need to get in. Can you explain a little bit about the formula for teams that would have to get into the high school football playoffs? What goes into it?
Yeah, it's going to take into account who you beat, which is something we felt was important, right? That your strength of schedule is going to come into play by that as well. So really, it's going to start with first level points, tier one points, I think we called it. If you beat a Division I team, you're going to get 6.5 points. If you get a Division II team, you get 6 points, and on down. And then you take that number and divide that by the number of games you played, which is hopefully 9. We know there's some instances where teams don't play a complete schedule, but in a perfect world, you divide that number by 9, and that's your tier one points. And then your tier two points come from the teams that you beat. You get their tier one points. So if we played, you know, when Verona beat us last year, week one, they got our points, and that spoke good for them. We ended up being a decent record, and they got quite a few points from us. So their tier one points, you take that number divided by the number of games possibly played, which would be 81. And then we originally times that by 10, but we knocked it down one notch, and we're going to times that by 9. And that's your tier two points. And you add your tier one and tier two points, and that's your ranking. And that tells you where you're going to be seated and all that good stuff, right? But it's right out there. It's pretty easy to figure out. I'm not a math guy by any stretch of the imagination, and I could follow it along. So that was good for me. But you know, and then based upon geographically, we're going to take those top four people are going to be one seeds, and the next four, 5, 6, 7, 8 are going to be your two seeds, and so forth. So we're excited. I think it's pretty easy, transparent, and we feel now is the time for change. You know, there's a few hiccups that took place last season, and we feel now we got the eyes and ears of everybody throughout the WIA and the WFCA, and we want to make a positive change for all schools and for our membership.
Brian, I want to first of all, are you able to stick around a couple more minutes? Because I do want to follow up on that thought.
Absolutely.
So if you're able to stick around, I do want to follow up on that thought, because I'm curious about how this kind of originated and came through, and whether the situation which happened this year was any part inspiration to this. So we'll talk about that here in just a minute. Again, if you're just joining us, Brian Kaminsky, the head coach at Sun Prairie East and also president of the Wisconsin Football Coaches Association, on with us, talking about something that would greatly change playoff qualification for high school football in Wisconsin. The only high school sport, by the way, where, again, it's not everybody in because of the nature of football. You can only play a game a week. Would be really tough to go back to the old days of doing the 3 games in 10 days. So there's a limit of teams that get into the postseason, and we'll talk a little bit more about this coming up. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media, and we'll have more coming up right after this. I'm Jimmy Cuska filling in back on Civic Media again right after this.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A 2023 decision in an Arkansas redistricting case found individual voters did not have a private right of action to challenge the maps. The state of Louisiana tried the same tactic in its chaotic gerrymandering case, but was refused on June 24th. Be looking for another challenge in 2025. Defying precedent, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals held in a 2023 Arkansas racial gerrymandering case that individual voters do not have a private right of action under the VRA Section 2. It said only the U.S. Justice Department could bring such cases, despite individuals having filed 90% of previous challenges. Calling it radical, scholars expected it to be quickly overturned, but this January, the full Eighth Circuit refused to rehear the case. Seeing an opening, Louisiana asked the full Fifth Circuit to rehear its gerrymandering case on the same grounds, with 13 other Republican attorneys general urging a no private right of action decision. In a close vote Monday, the Fifth Circuit refused that rehearing. For now, the Eighth Circuit decision still only affects Arkansas, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota. But it's clear that private right of action is the new battleground and will almost certainly reach the U.S. Supreme Court. We've linked to more on the private right of action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
In the corner of my mind stands a jukebox. It's playing all my favorite memories.
Cardi is playing the hits from my hometown of Kidott, Wisconsin, right here. This is what you'll hear on every radio station within a 40-mile radius of the Chippewa Valley. Welcome back. It's the Maggie Dodd Show here on Civic Media. I'm Jimmy Cuskett filling in today. I am the sports director here at Civic Media, and we are spending some time, believe it or not, shockingly, with the sports director at the helm, talking some sports here on a topic that not just something that I'm selfishly invested in as a high school football coach myself, but something that I know that affects high school programs around the state. And I'm talking with Brian Kaminsky, who's the president of the Wisconsin Football Coaches Association, about this. Brian, we left off the last segment talking about, what goes into the formula for qualification. But one thing I was going to ask you about was how this came about, because this year we actually had a mistake in how teams were decided for the final playoff field, where there were two teams in and two teams out, where a tiebreaker was applied incorrectly. And that's on top of all the usual grumbling over seeding this year, exacerbated by the fact that, again, with computer seeding, there's not a lot of appeal process to it. So I'm curious that was this proposal in the works before what happened with setting the playoff field, or is this something that really came to a head once this all kind of happened in October?
Yeah, it was in the works before that. We've always taken a look at things after every year and how could we make high school football better in the state of Wisconsin. So I know we've surveyed membership about all play in years past, and our membership was strongly against that, which, to be honest, I'm glad. I like the fact you got to win and to earn your way into the playoffs. That just makes the regular season mean that much more, and it makes it that much more special, and you can build upon things in that regard. So, but we've surveyed them. They've come back strongly against that. So we're trying to figure out ways to tweak it. Jesse Norris and Andy Lavoie at Edgewood had been doing some research about this Ohio model. So we kind of took what Ohio does and made it our own with some changes to how they do things and what we can do best to provide the highest quality of football playoffs here in the state of Wisconsin that we could. So, and then it would just get, I think it gained a little bit more traction, to be honest with you, when there were a couple of those hiccups that came out. It opened people's eyes and maybe opened people's minds to, yes, maybe we can change this now. It's been a while that we've been going this way, but how can we make it better and improve it and being transparent, right? So hopefully we don't have those problems that happened this year. It was unfortunate that those two schools didn't get in, but I'll give Ms. Hauser some credit. She went down to those schools and had a meeting with them in person. That wasn't an easy thing to do. You know, it's, we're all going to make mistakes, but it's how you handle those mistakes that are going to make who you are. And so I was pleased that she was able to go down there and talk to those people in person and take some questions and take the hard hits, because that's not an easy thing to do, right? I think that opened up people's eyes, and now we feel that iron's kind of hot to make some changes that could be positive. So I think that helped gain some traction, definitely.
Well, now that the survey is back and you had overwhelming support, is how I've been labeling this, 87.5, that's 7 out of every 8 coaches, literally 7 out of 8, 350 of 400. So if you want more math for this program, there you go. It's fractions. My kids are learning about it right now in elementary school. So I'm on top of it today, Brian.
No, better than I do. That's for sure.
Well, my kids are in third grade. They're already very much smarter than me. So I want to ask about this, though. Now that we have the survey in hand and we've got the support, what are the next steps to this now to, get this through? I know that there's a process of review. There's, you know, committees and things. What are the next steps for this proposal?
Yeah, there's quite a few. So January 7th, our coaches advisory will go ahead and present this to the WIAA at that meeting, as far as a change that we'd like to see moving forward. And then ultimately it's got to go to a couple levels of committees that they have. And then it officially goes, hopefully gets all the way up to the Board of Control in February, and the Board of Control can vote on it. So, there's different levels, but what we got to continue to do is continue to let people know how this is going to work, how it's going to benefit the high school student athletes in the state of Wisconsin. We got to keep promoting it. We got to keep talking about it. We got to now get in front of our ADs and superintendents, because they're ultimately going to be people that are going to be voting on it and expressing our desire for the change and why. And I think the big thing is let them know why. That helps people understand it. And, you know, we're passionate. We got a great coaches association here in the state, and a lot of people are willing to work hard and are trying to make things as good as we can. So we got to continue doing that before it gets to those committees, and maybe get a hold of those people on those committees and send the video. That's how we kind of did that video. Some people can read things and pick it up, and some people like to be able to hear things and talk through things. And so it's just going to continue to educate people about the whys and how it makes our association better.
I really appreciate all the insight and time into this because, again, selfishly as a high school assistant coach in the state, not a head coach, didn't get the vote on this, but I it was one of those things that I recognized right away as not only a prompt for change, but something that, again, in the interest of transparency, knowing where things are going, is something I personally can get very much behind. So I appreciate your insight and your work on this. Looking forward to seeing where it goes. This is a very interesting time in high school sports, as you know, being in it as well, in regards to the votes we've had in the past couple of years with things like NIL and shot clocks and all the other crazy things that happened. The high school sports world is definitely changing right now. And to see things like this, some level-headed approaches to some problems and some conflicts that we need to resolve, this is certainly refreshing to see. Thank you for your time and for explaining everything for us here.
Well, thank you guys for having me. Congratulations. Let's give you a plug. Assistant Coach of the Year. That's a heck of an honor, man. Very proud of you for doing that. Hey, you can smile about it, but that's special when other people in your conference can recognize people's desire and the work that they put in. That's special. So congratulations on that.
I don't know how many teams I go 0-9 get any coaching honors, but, you know, we would definitely put forth an effort. So
absolutely.
All right, Coach, thank you for your time, and look forward to talking to you again down the road as we learn more about this proposal.
Anytime. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yep. Brian Kaminsky, president of the Wisconsin Football Coaches Association, head coach at Sun Prairie East High School as well, a longtime coach at the Cardinals there, joining us to talk about the high school football proposal that, again, changes qualifications and seating for the playoffs. And we're going to talk we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk sports still. We're going to switch and talk about the Bucks and a book being written about them. We're going to talk to Jordan Tresky about a book being written about the Milwaukee Bucks, the vintage era Bucks, their first NBA championship. How was that team built, and how did it grow into becoming the Bucks that were very good for a long time, then very bad for a while, and then very good again recently when they won another NBA championship? We're going to talk to Jordan all about that. He's a podcaster as well, so he covers the team on a regular basis in addition to writing this book. We'll have Jordan Tresky on next. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media.
It's playing on my favorite memory. can't stop this jukebox in my mind.
News from the Center, WRCE. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Class 3 milk price will see support or not as a coin flip to kick off 2025. Pessimism derives from more cheese supply expected thanks to new plants coming online and the threat of tariffs with a new administration. I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report, and Colin Artema is a dairy market advisor and licensed agent with EverAg. And he says, although there is kind of that pessimism, there's also some silver linings for Wisconsin dairy farmers.
Class 4, I would say, paints a different picture. Most of the plants coming online are in the Class 3 space. So these plants will have to take milk from dairies that usually ship to Class 4. And also China is a watch factor as well. They have been buying more product in the last months, and their domestic milk production is declining. Butter is down from its highs, but buyers seem interested in buying product here around the $2.50 price point, which is hopefully providing some support.
That's Colin Artema, dairy market advisor with EverAg. I will look at your closing markets right after this.
You see the headlines all the time: consumers confused by food labels. Well, not if they shop at Bavaria Sausage. Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke here, asking you to take a closer look at the food labels at Bavaria Sausage. You know, they are working towards making sure when you take a look at whatever product they've got in the store, you know exactly what it is. They're using different colors. They're also making sure that there's a picture on that label to help you better understand the protein source that you're looking at. It's all about making sure they're combining the old world flavors, the artisan blends, and making sure that you understand when there's something new in the showcase, what is it? And where did it come from? Simple information, easily understood. And of course, there's always someone there to answer your questions if you've got them. Bavaria Sausage at the corner of Nesbitt Road, Fitchrona Road in Fitchburg, located also online, BavariaSausage.com. Old recipes, new labels. Take a look.
I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your closing markets. Cash corn closed at $4.54. That was up a quarter. New crop corn closed at 440 and three quarters, down a penny. Cash beans closed at 980, down 8 cents. And new crop beans closed at 1004 and a half, down 5 cents. Cash wheat closed at 546 and a half, up 5.5 cents. And new crop wheat closed at 563 and three quarters, up 4.25 cents. January Class 3 milk contract is trading at 2010 a hundredweight, up 48 cents. And February milk is trading at 2046 a hundredweight, up 56 cents. Barrel cheese closed at 176 and three quarters, up 2 3/4. 40-pound block cheese closed at 187 and a quarter, up 1 1/4. And the double A butter had no change and closed at 257 and a half. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy with rain tonight, a few foggy areas as well, lows in the upper 30s. For the afternoon, we'll look for a mostly cloudy sky, your Saturday high in the mid-40s. Maybe a shower Sunday once again, highs in the low 40s. It's 42 right now.
Earl Ingram.
Chuck from East Troy. Good morning to you, Chuck. You say what?
I have a bone to pick with you. Since my wife discovered Civic Media 2 years ago, we are addicted to Civic Media, and you are one of the ringleaders. So anyway, I just want to thank you. Have a good day.
Hey, Chuck, man, thank you very much for the call. Tell your wife I said thank you, and it's an honor and a privilege.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, we tell ghost stories with paranormal investigator Todd Michaels. And then it's a bar band Friday night. Terry Barr drops by with new music and great conversation.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show on Civic Media. I'm Jimmy Cuska filling in for another half hour before we give way to the Dom Salvia Show. As part of my contractually mandated sports segment here on Civic Media, when they ask the sports director to fill in on these shows, I say, well, you know, you're going to have to expect I'm going to talk sports. And we're going to talk some big time sports today, as we're going to talk about a book coming out about the Milwaukee Bucks and their history. And as someone who is both a history nerd and a Bucks nerd, this is literally something that'll end up in my bookshelf here pretty soon. Jordan Tresky is the author of Building the Milwaukee Bucks. Jordan, I am thrilled to have you on to talk about this book because, again, these are two things that are right in my lane of things I care about and that I work towards in my life. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm very, very excited to be talking about this. I've had to sit on this news for quite a while, so now that it's out in the open, I'm very happy to talk about it with anybody, including yourself.
Yeah, what a great holiday gift, right? I get to talk about a book I wrote. Like, and if, what's it like to write a book? I mean, that's like a life goal for people, right? That's a New Year's resolution type thing. So you've got a life goal checked off now that you've written a book. What's that process like for you?
It's crazy. Definitely the perfect timing. Like when I got like the book cover and like details from that from McFarlane and Company, my publisher, I was very just like, this is like the perfect timing. I literally emailed them like, this is like the best Christmas gift ever. But yeah, like writing a book, I honestly, this is not how I thought it was going to come out initially. I can go back to like the start where like, you know, I write a lot about the Bucks winning the title in 2021 was kind of the impetus for a lot of things. I do a podcast or co-host a podcast about the Bucks, and have been doing it for like almost 10 years. And history has always been a big part of our, you know, coverage because one, it kind of gets lost in the shuffle, whether it's just because of the NBA and their history kind of pales in comparison to NFL or MLB. It's a lot more scattered. And the Bucks themselves, like they do some good things, but by and large, it's like, you know, when you're going in depth stuff, you know, there's a lot of things that kind of just, you know, get lost to time. So that has always been like a big thing of our history, like doing the podcast for this long and many episodes are just talking about like big Bucks figures because there's a lot of them, obviously. So when the Bucks won the title and, you know, 50 years since they had won it, that was just kind of like this, you know, critical mass, I guess, of just like, let's go back and like, let's just like, how was it winning the title then? And then as just someone that could not get enough of just like, I would find things and keep finding things and I just didn't want to stop. So that was basically like, I was just researching and I'm just writing things down and I'm keeping track of timelines. And that was kind of like the start. And then the whole book part of it, I was just kind of like sitting on things and I'm like, I don't know really what it is yet. Like I was trying to like whittle, you know, you're whittling things down. What makes a good story, but how do you tell it in a way that's both believable, entertaining, and actually factual? And then I just kind of just started submitting it. I like just did it on a whim, like over the summer. And luckily I found a really good publisher that was interested in the story and said, yeah, let's do it. And I'm like, okay.
That's amazing how these things come out because I've done that before in researching for high school sports mostly, but you know, I'll be keeping track of notes and I'll just kind of, I'll find a nugget. I'll find something that I add to a broadcast. And I'm like, you know, this merits a follow-up. So let's go on a deep dive. And then here I find myself 20 hours later and I've got a complete understanding of a random team from the 1980s, but you know, what's the platform to share that on? So it's really interesting to me personally, as someone who spends a lot of time digging through sports history, that's kind of the inspiration for putting it together and organizing in a way, research into something that is readable. So to me, it's very relatable, but you know, for you, what kind of time, what kind of process goes into, you know, into the research of something that happened, as you said, over 50 years ago?
Oh, a lot of trips to the Milwaukee Public Library. God, I love the Milwaukee Public Library. Like, just the fact that, you know, that is the only place that you can find, like, old Milwaukee Journal, Milwaukee Sentinel pieces or clippings and newspaper articles. Like, you can't do that on newspapers.com, which, you know, has its pluses and minuses. But, yeah, I would say probably on and off, for a year, I was doing research only just to get as much as I could and then build from there. And I'm doing this as, you know, the season's going on. I'm doing a day job. I had just, like, lost my job as we started doing a research and then I got a new one. I was kind of, like, not happy doing that, too. So I was like, whatever, like, kind of, like, pushed me further into researching, I was doing it. And my wife was at the time, it was my fiance, and she was like, you know, I support you, like, as much as it was, like, a strain on, like, seeing her, and, like, we were on different schedules, it was like, do what you want to do. And I was like, that was the best thing that anybody could have said to me, because I was like, at that time, I was like, I just want to get this done. And yeah, the researching was like 1 year for on and off, and then, you know, bits and pieces if I had to fill in the gaps. And then writing it was kind of like, in, you know, again, just trying to find time. Like, I would have, like, periods of, like, I would finish writing it, then just kind of step away, because you're just like, I don't know if I could really critically, like, look at my own writing and say, like, this looks good, because I had just been, you know, in it for a very long time. And then it was after I got married that I kind of started getting back into the swing of things, and then looking back at, okay, this works, this doesn't, like, you know, you have to, like, have some removal of it to make it look like, this is a good story. This is, like, this tells an accurate portrayal of, like, how the Bucks were thought of or looked at based on coverage or based on, you know, whatever, like, anything that was out there. It led me not just, like, research, like, going, looking at, like, newspaper stuff, but, like, reading any kind of book within that time frame, especially Milwaukee books, because there are some, but a lot of them are just out of print. So I'd be buying them on, like, eBay, Amazon, or if the library had, like, an art. Dedicating your life to this, like, out of nowhere, just kind of, like, takes you up and, like, not spits you out, but you're just like, what happened for the last, like, two, three years?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it is. We're talking to Jordan Tresky, who has written a book about the Milwaukee Bucks. And we're talking about an era that is more than 50 years ago. So, you know, the Bucks from 1968 to 1973, building up to that first NBA championship. Jordan, you know, this era, you know, for people like me, I'm born in the 1980s, so this is beyond my years, right? So I'm too young to maybe, you know, I didn't grow up with this. I grew up with a Bucks team that was on the other end of the spectrum, right? We got to struggle through the 90s, and I got to deal with the early 2000s and the Eastern Conference Finals, which, you know, it's peeling off a Band-Aid for a lot of people, right? But it is fascinating, because, you know, when you talk about professional sports in the 1960s and 1970s, it is unrecognizable to what we have, you know, even in the last 25 years, and especially today. So when you're going through this and talking about building a team, you know, the mechanisms for building a franchise back then, when it just seemed like teams would come and go, like, at a whim, right? You talk about at a whim and writing research. Well, back then, teams would just fold, be done after a few years. There wasn't a whole lot of stability, at least, you know, in the 60s. So what were some of the, you know, other, not just the challenges in research, but just challenges in trying to tell a story about an era of professional sports that again, you almost can't recognize it in context to the modern game.
Yeah, that honestly was probably the biggest challenge in all of this, especially you mentioned, it's like, I obviously was not alive when the Bucks won the title, when they were born. You know, this era I was not present for, but based on going through, you know, countless of newspaper articles, reading, you know, NBA history books, reading Milwaukee-based books, you get, like, it can simulate what it felt like reading and following the Bucks at that time. And as you mentioned, like, the NBA at the time is not this, what it is now. It's not even, you can't see, like, where they were and be like, yeah, like, I could see them blossoming into this huge international, you know, sports league that encompasses so many countries as players coming from, like, the NBA was still just trying to find its footing. It's, you know, a lot of the book is based in the time frame of when the ABA was trying to, you know, take away, like eat away at it, trying to force a merger. And Milwaukee itself is like at the center of it, in part because of how Kareem comes to Milwaukee, because, you know, the ABA looked at him as this, you know, the player that could force a merger or even swallow up the NBA, because it wasn't as established as, like, you know, very similar to like the AFL-NFL merger in that way. So you have that element of it. And then just like, yeah, like you never know when, just because you start a sports team doesn't mean it's going to like last 50, how long the Bucks have been around, 57 years. Mm-hmm. So part of that is like the Bucks are still a thing today. And I wanted to really recognize and put home as many ways possible. It's like, by and large, that's responsible due to how just unique their origin story is. Because they win the championship so fast, because Kareem and eventually Oscar Robertson play for them, that is a huge reason why that the Bucks are still a thing today, and why they were able to sustain themselves during that time period after Kareem leaves. And then, you know, the trade to help them kind of, you know, they don't win during the 80s, but they're still a respected team during that time. So I think that kind of, because they were bad for so long, and especially for a good portion of my lifetime until Giannis shows up, and not even right away. But I think that's why I really wanted to, like, hey, the Bucks were like a, they were viewed as big as like what the Spurs would be, like that equivalent of like a small market team that is in the thick of things. They're winning titles, like, you know, that meant something at one point in time. And just because they were bad for a very long time, I think that gets lost in, you know, due to time and history.
And that's something that's present in the modern era as well, where a superstar, especially for a small market team, can really just define whether that team, you know, can find success, be competitive, compete for a championship. And what's amazing is that even in the modern era, it might look a lot different with free agency and the massive amounts of money that go around, but it really all comes back to if you can find those one or two guys, you know, in basketball, that's really the key, right? You got to find those one or two guys. What were they saying in that era that might apply to what it's like right now?
Yeah, that is honestly why I think telling the story or writing the story, it is. Everything about that time period feels very modern, because Kareem is the, you know, he was viewed as the next thing to Bill Russell, to Wilt Chamberlain. Like, his importance, obviously, we talked about the ABA, but his importance to the game of just basketball was just so massive coming out of UCLA, because they won three straight titles. They did things that like no other school program has ever done. You obviously have Oscar, who's at that time, he's, you know, viewed as fading. Injuries are starting to catch up to him. He's approaching 30 or on the backside of 30. And then it's like very much like, because it was so restrictive for him to move around, and he's the president of the players union. So you see the side of him kind of exercising, hey, I don't want to play in Cincinnati anymore. They didn't really want him to play anymore in Cincinnati either. They wanted to move on from him. They wanted to be younger. And he kind of exercised what we would call like player empowerment or superstar movement, whatever you want to call it, to want to come to Milwaukee. So like that in two moves within a year of each other defines that early point of the Bucks and wanting to go for it and obviously winning a title. So yeah, I think that's where, as much as things like there are different mechanisms and like understanding how free agency worked during that time is like, it doesn't exist to the same degree. Like there's no CBA, there's no things that is more common knowledge to like the diehard NBA fan. You can't equate that to the same way during that time, because there was no same, you know, rule book or paper or whatever you want to call it. So outside of like those different mechanisms, like it's a very modern style story of just seeing the importance of what won, and then eventually Oscar coming about, like how important that was to a team like Milwaukee.
Jordan, if you got time, would you be willing to stick around for a couple more minutes?
Of course.
Awesome. We'll have more coming up with Jordan Tresky right after this. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media. I'm Jimmy Cuskett filling in. More coming up right after this.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You want to feel important.
You want to be part of something bigger, something that matters and can help change things.
You want to feel like you belong.
We know. We felt that way too. And that's why we did something about it.
We aren't just Army National Guard soldiers.
We are normal people just like you. But our part-time service in the Army National Guard means we get to be more.
When our communities are in need, we get the chance to stand up and do something about it.
We get to serve in our own region and help the people we call neighbors.
From the lake shores of Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota.
The fertile fields of Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa to the wide open plains of North and South Dakota.
We are here for our hometowns.
And together, we can make a difference. Take on your legacy. Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
The Todd Alba Show.
UW Systems spends $51 million of our taxpayer money for consultants. Three times the budget shortfall that triggered the Oshkosh layoffs in 2023. Why is there such silence from Democrats in the state capitol on this? Ask people at Richland Center, Waukesha, Washington County, if they got their $51 million worth for the UW system.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. The Dom Salvia Show.
How about this one? Harvey K., a Delano Democrat.
The problem with that is that was his mother's family name. You might not realize that he had a father, too.
Come on, man.
Subscribe to my arguments, and you can call a Dom Democrat.
All right, I'll take a Dom Democrat. But Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a big favorite here on the show.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Welcome back. It's the Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media. Dom Salvia's show comes your way here in about 10 minutes from now. Later on tonight, it's the return of Pete Schwabba to Nightlight here on the Civic Media Network. Right here for another 10 minutes or so, going to talk a little more sports. Jordan Tresky, who is the author of the upcoming book, Building the Milwaukee Bucks, is joining us again for another segment. Well, first of all, before we talk more about the book, this book is coming out pretty soon, right? Like in the next year?
Yes, it's coming out in the next year. Yes.
So I guess, you know, since people can pre-order this now, and the link we'll have up on our podcast page so people can click to pre-order. But if people wanted to know, you know, give them like a back cover sleeve synopsis of what the book is about. If people pick up this book, what should they expect, Jordan?
Obviously, I think this is at its heart, it's a Bucks story. Clearly, it obviously covers Kareem, who, I think one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to write this is that he's just such a misunderstood figure now, even after all this time. And a lot of the things that were tagged to him based on, you know, coming to Milwaukee, and that in itself is a big part of why I wanted to tell the story of just like him being Milwaukee. And we know that he left. Why did he leave? What were the reasons that he wanted to leave a team like the Bucks, where they were clearly successful and all this stuff? Like, that was just kind of a gap there, and how he was characterized for a very long time. I think a lot of it just, it stems from that time period. Like, we think of Kareem during the Lakers era and Showtime and Magic Johnson, all this stuff. But we don't think of young Kareem, where he's literally one of the most dominant players in NBA history. And yeah, he only won one title, but yeah. So I think a lot of that was one layer of it, of just telling his, like, how crazy his life was during that time. And he's the biggest figure in basketball, and there was just a lot going on there. Then talking more about like the Oscar Robertson's role and the fading superstar, him guiding the players union through the merger years, which was spent in legal fees and just battling back and forth of guys going to the ABA, guys going to the NBA, and just like this almost like tearing apart basketball itself, pro basketball itself. And then a lot of the things that I kept coming back to were just like the Milwaukee elements and telling this, the time period, because I think that frames everything perfectly, at least in my opinion, of like the Bucks are born in 1968. It's months removed from, or it's during the time of like the open housing marches. It's just a lot of, there's just a lot going on there. It's rich in its history, and obviously being removed from it, we see how things have evolved. But at the time, you could just imagine like just the social climate, political climate, whatever you want to call it. I think that kind of helps like give us, I would hope, the reader like the accurate portrayal of how everything looks and how everything was viewed and written about at that time, because it does frame how you look at all these players or how the NBA has looked at the time, especially through a very black and white thing, literally. And so that was the thing that kind of kept me coming back and more of just like, I have the Bucks element, I have the Kareem Oscar element, I have Larry Costello and like all these big figures in Bucks history. But you can't tell those stories without like the time period, like their stories don't exist in a vacuum. I should say
that's going to be a very long back cover for the book, but no, I appreciate all that. You can find Jordan's other work. He does podcasts, GSPN. He also does the Bucks, the Win in Six podcast. And then of course the Talk of the Tundra, if you're looking for some Packers content. So we've got several podcasts that you're part of as well. But Jordan, we're out of time because it's radio. It's not a podcast. We have to, got to pay the bills, you know, play the commercials. So appreciate your time and insight. The book is Building the Milwaukee Bucks, and it is coming out next year. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Jordan Tresky, again, the author of Building the Milwaukee Bucks. It covers the era from 1968 to 1973. It's amazing when, you know, first of all, I haven't read this book because it's not out yet, but as somebody who's been in sports a long time, well aware of what this era of basketball was like in the NBA. And I think it's fascinating, even if you're not necessarily a sports fan, but if you're curious about, you know, business or just the way things worked in the late 60s, early 70s, and how chaotic it was, even in professional sports. I mean, we're talking around the time the NFL had just had its merger with the AFL, right? We had just had, you know, the first few Super Bowls. The NFL wasn't this sure thing that it is today, where it dominates every holiday, every single weekday. It wasn't like that. Sports back then were not what they are now. Today, sports, live sporting events completely dominate what people watch over the air on TV, what they stream, and what they consume. Sports has pervaded every single part of life at this point. But it's fascinating because in that era, it was so much different. And, you know, building a contender or building a championship team was very much, you know, very much in the regard that it was a total wild gamble as to whether something would succeed. That was all very much the same back then. Even today, with all the technology and scouting reports and 24/7 media coverage, there are still teams that get it wrong and regularly get it wrong. And it's amazing to me that that part of it hasn't changed. The random element of professional sports hasn't changed at all this time, which I find to be utterly fascinating. But this is a great local look at it. And if you're a fan of the team and you're of my age, you know, I'm in my late 30s. So if you're of my age and you weren't around for that first championship, it's a good history lesson. And Jordan, I'm sure, will have a great book when it does come out later in 2025. Big thanks to all of our guests today, including Brian Kaminsky, who joined us earlier this hour. Big thanks as well to Carter for producing the show. You are the MVP of this program. I'm Jimmy Cuska. I am out of here, and Maggie Dawn will be taking over her own show again here real soon. For now, thank you for joining us. Have a great weekend, everybody, and thank you for tolerating me. The Dom Salvia Show is next here on the Civic Media Network.
From the center, WRCE. Dom Salvia.
Next time, James Santel, former U.S. attorney and host of Amicus, the Law Review, will join me to discuss if the president-elect should be disqualified under the 14th Amendment's Insurrection Clause. Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
The Todd Alba Show.
UW System spends $51 million of our taxpayer money for consultants. Three times the budget shortfall that triggered the Oshkosh layoffs in 2023. Why is there such silence from Democrats in the state capitol on this? Ask people at Richland Center, Waukesha, Washington County, if they got their $51 million worth for the UW System.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A deadly explosion at a Tyson poultry plant in Camilla, Georgia, early this morning.
You can see fire over the back of the building. Appears to be the northeast corner of the building.
Radio calls provided by Broadcastify. At least one person dead. The union representing plant workers blaming the blast on a boiler explosion and saying several workers were severely burned. U.S. officials telling ABC News that a Russian anti-aircraft system may be responsible for a commercial plane crash in Kazakhstan that left 38 people dead. ABC's Andrea Fujihi points out
the crash prompting comparisons to the 2014 downing of a Malaysian Airlines flight, which investigators determined was shot down by Russian forces in Ukraine.
Another stowaway was caught on a Delta Airlines flight, this time from Seattle to Hawaii, as the plane taxied for takeoff on Christmas Eve. Authorities say the individual passed through TSA screening without a boarding pass. This is ABC News.